what the BBC is doing, is trying to do under this name of disinformation and verify, is just close down freedom of expression. And that is truly sinister.
Coming up on British Thought Leaders, David Cayley talks about BBC bias and why he sees the BBC Verify service as an attack on freedom.
They've joined with organisations who are similarly left-leaning throughout the world to do this. Plus the big companies like Google and Microsoft. So they're in alliance with all the people who are trying to control the agenda of what is said.
David talks about progressive views infiltrating every aspect of the national broadcaster.
But in every programme, there has to be something which is about Britain's colonial past or its links with slavery. And these are ramped up as being, oh God, look at this. This is what our past was like. And it's in the fabric of the programme now.
Welcome to British Thought Leaders, I'm Lee Hall. Today I'm sitting down with David Cayley, Managing Director of Newswatch. David, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
You were a BBC journalist and senior publicist before working at Newswatch. Can you give us a brief intro into what your organisation does and why it's important?
My organisation, Newswatch, was founded, although it's called something else then, but it's been in existence more or less as it is now since 1999. And it was set up in that year because we were very concerned about how the BBC were covering EU affairs. It was the beginnings of the stirrings of, Nigel Farage was on the scene, although he wasn't leader of the party back then, but UKIP was clearly on the scene. And we just wanted to have an overall look at how the BBC covered the elections that year. And we were astonished just how little coverage there was.
So, I mean, you've been tracking the BBC bias for 25 years.
Yes.
What kind of trends have you seen, especially in recent times?
On the one hand, they just look through the lens of the main political parties in their political coverage. On the other hand, they tend to think that those who don't follow establishment views, in inverted commas, are beyond the pale. And under their definition of due impartiality, which means they decide how much coverage they're going to give to differing opinions, the media establishment in the UK, which the BBC is one of the most, obviously the most important components, it's locked into its own confirmation bias of what the world is like. So on climate change, for example, no one will countenance, that, apart from maybe GB News, no one will countenance the idea that those who are advocating climate alarmism are actually not basing their projections on actual data. They're twisting the data.
I wanted to go into the complaints system a bit with you. And can you tell us, for a start, how the complaint system at the BBC works and what kind of volumes they're dealing with?
You've got to somehow encapsulate a complaint in a very short number of words and put it into the format that the BBC wants. The BBC have then got a subcontracted unit, which is run by Capita, but within the BBC, and it's based primarily in Northern Ireland. And what they do is, so that's what's called a stage 1A complaint. And what they do at that stage is they answer the complaints from people who are employed, very good at making explanations at the ground level. If you're dissatisfied at that level, you can complain again. So people who are making complaints have got to have a lot of time. They've got to be able to marshal arguments against people who are professionally trained in making arguments and so on. Ofcom have said in a recent report that a great deal of, I forget the precise numbers, but it's well over 75% are dissatisfied with the way that the system works. If you've got even more time and more perseverance, you can then appeal to go to the what's called the editorial complaints unit, which is a department within the BBC. So this is now transitioning away from the subcontracted to the internal BBC people themselves, but it's under the direction of and the line management of the Director General. So the main appeals body, the Editorial Complaints Unit, ECU, is actually run by the man who runs the BBC, and obviously has got a great vested interest in the BBC's perspective. Now, I'm not saying that people aren't capable of taking on board other people's views, but I come back to this point about confirmation bias. So you've got this built-in kind of resistance to complaints. If you go to the ECU, then you've got to rewrite the complaint, effectively summarize it in a very sharp, clear manner. And you're now up against some of the top editorial brains in the BBC who are trying to pick holes in what you've framed. And I've just got some figures to show just how difficult it is to, when you get to that level, to get any success in a complaint. And in the last year, the last accounting year, 23-24, there were something around 320 complaints went to the ECU.
So these are ones that have got through the counter.
Yes, have gone right through. And only six were upheld. 94 were actually turned down out of hand. A few were what was called resolved, and a few more were partially upheld.
Do you know how many they're getting kind of right at the first stage, roughly?
Again, it's very hard to track this. We reckon that in the current charter period, so starting in 2017, going through to, this is going back actually not to bang up to date, something like 2 million complaints received in total. Now, not all those are about impartiality, it's important to state. They are about accuracy, obviously, and how the BBC behaves, whether they're making commercial placement for certain products, all that kind of thing. So it's catch-all. But overall, I think the complaints, the BBC complaint system, the condemnation of it is it's run by themselves, for themselves. They have no inclination whatsoever to accept complaints unless they're really, really pushed against the wall. And they don't, and certainly in the impartiality domain, which is where most of the, obviously, political and public concern is lies.
Yeah. What's Ofcom's role in all of this?
Right. So Ofcom's role in all this was changed as a result of the current charter. And they came in as the body which is the overall regulatory body of the BBC. It's hard to explain it precisely. The BBC remains self-governing to all intents and purposes. But theoretically, if something goes very seriously wrong, then Ofcom is there as the regulator. It sets the rules in terms of the broadcasting code and so on. If you're not satisfied with the ECU, you have the option to go to Ofcom and to submit the same complaint, not a regurgitation of it or anything like that, and say, well, actually, I'm not satisfied. But now here, the picture gets even bleaker because Ofcom get a large number of referrals, but not massive numbers, because the whole system is so difficult, as I think I've explained.
Well, someone would have to really persevere to get to that point.
Yes, and you have to not just the time, but almost legal understanding and journalistic understanding of what the arguments are. But in the same period, Ofcom has upheld only a handful of complaints against the BBC. So, and the rest it's just battered away and said, well, no, they're not of substance. We agree with the BBC. Mm. Part of the problem, I believe, there is that the part of Ofcom that deals with complaints is the Contents Board. I don't have the current figures, but I've tracked over the years who's on the contents board. And most of these people have spent a significant time of their career at the BBC. They've got the same perspective on how the media issues, bias issues, as the BBC itself. I'm not saying individuals aren't capable of making of their own judgments, but it's just, again, the proof of the pudding is in the figures.
So you've done all this research and have this insight. I mean, do you think this system is fit for purpose?
Absolutely not. And we argued this, and so we've just been through the BBC midterm review, and we had a culture secretary when the midterm review was set up. So the midterm review was midterm in the current charter, which runs from 2017 to 2027.
Right.
And it was thought wise that because it was a new system with the Ofcom regulation, that there would be a midterm review of how the charter was actually operating. And at the time that the midterm review was confirmed, Nadine Dorries was Secretary of State for in the Culture Department, and we got an invite via her to make submissions to the midterm review about what we thought should happen to the complaints process. And we put in a very comprehensive document about that, which is on our website, and anybody can look at what we said. And what we said is basically what I've just been saying now, that it wasn't fit for purpose. Now, we got pretty positive feedback that something was going to happen, and that the powers that be were aware that something needed to change. But what we've also subsequently heard is that a mistake was made in the setting up of the midterm review, in that the BBC, it was provided that the BBC had to agree to any changes that were made.
Right.
And they didn't.
Right.
We don't know precisely what was put to the BBC in terms of the changes that we proposed, but as I say, we're guessing they were on the lines that I've outlined. And what we said was basically the only way of dealing with this is to set up a complaint system, which most other national bodies have, which is genuinely independent. Not people who work for the BBC, obviously, not people like the Ofcom Content Board, people who've got experience for whatever reason of the media, but are not, and can understand editorial judgments, but are not, don't have a dog in the game, as it were. And that's that, as I say, that's what we put as our main suggestion. And that was the one that we understand that the BBC just would not accept. And I really firmly believe, and the whole ethos of Newswatch is that if you had a genuinely independent system of complaints, the sort of bias that has developed would be very quickly rooted out, because it would take into account much bigger spectrum of opinion. And that's the huge problem in the equation. They're not, the BBC's woke agenda is of their own making, and anybody outside that is regarded as an enemy, basically.
The idea behind the BBC is that it aims to reflect the culture, values, identity of the British people. You mentioned the woke agenda there. I mean, do you think it's doing that? Or if not, whose culture, values and identity is it representing?
I don't believe it is. And one of my bugbears at the moment, it may seem relatively trivial, but I think the fact is that it's one of the main BBC programmes over many years that people have trusted, is the Antiques Roadshow. And whilst I haven't done any longitudinal research on it, I do watch it every week. And it's become a show which, I mean, it's still got the intrinsic interest in valuing objects, but in every programme there has to be something which is about Britain's colonial past or its links with slavery. And these are ramped up as being, oh God, look at this, this is what our past was like. And it's in the fabric of the programme now. So what was an entertainment programme and obviously an educational programme in lots of ways, has become yet another platform for the anti-colonial agenda.
How did this ideological capture happen?
If I knew that answer, I think I'd be quite rich. But I think it's over. I think it's over many years. I worked at the BBC a long time ago. Now it was in the 1980s, and I was in a relatively, although I wasn't particularly that senior in the hierarchy, I worked with the very senior news managers in the 80s. And the news editors. And I think it was already what is often called the long march through the institutions had begun to happen. It was the liberal left view that was gradually being introduced into the equation. When I was when I sat in on the weekly news editors meeting at the current affairs editors meetings at what was Lime Grove then, there was only one man who acknowledged being a conservative, who happened to be the chair, the overall boss. But it was very radical even back then. And I think it's just been a cumulative slow burn car crash of the views of the left have taken precedence in so many areas of BBC output. And it's impossible to trace exactly when, how, where, as it were. But it, as I say, it's just been that slow burn that's happened.
What needs to happen to save the BBC? What do you think the best outcome could be?
That's a difficult question. I'm not sure the BBC can be saved, but partly because the rot is so deeply set in, on the one hand. But secondly, I think what's happening in the broadcasting environment generally is changing. It's with AI and other trends, things, and streaming, obviously, and things are moving so fast that what the BBC is desperately trying to shore up, and Tim David gave a speech last couple of weeks ago saying, We need to continue the license fee. We need to carry on as we are. We are the bastion of public service broadcasting. They aren't. So when you actually analyse the different pillars of what the BBC is supposed to provide, it's not doing so. How long it will survive, I have no idea. But it's going to become a much more difficult job as the media environment itself changes, I think.
Do you think the lack of kind of competition, the license fee instills, has been a problem for the BBC in the long run? Things like Netflix come along and they can't really compete.
I think the things would change if there was a more commercial imperative in there. And just as I think an independent complaints unit would introduce the disciplines that allow the momentum that foments change, so too would the commercial imperative if they genuinely had to fight for audiences in the market. That's not to say that there perhaps shouldn't be some kind of public service broadcasting fund, which I think other countries have tried, which the production companies can apply for to keep programmes going that are not easy to make commercially successful. But so I'm not suggesting a complete free-for-all, but something that is much more, if you like, entrepreneurial and enterprise-driven. The point about the BBC is, as you just said, it doesn't innovate enough. It isn't on top of the trends enough. It's still relying on the Antiques Roadshow after all these years. Nothing wrong with that in one sense, but where are the equivalents? News formats haven't changed in years and years and years. The Today programme has remained virtually unchanged for all these years. And again, I'm not suggesting you just throw the cards up in the air, but there are, what the BBC has resisted is opportunities to make programming more flexible, more in touch with audiences, because it's got that momentum going that says, this is how we do things.
Yeah. There's been quite a bit of talk about the Verify service. I know recently the boss of the BBC talked about doubling down on that and making it global. Can you tell us what the Verify service is and what you thought about that comment?
Yes, so I think this is one of the most deeply sinister things about what the BBC are planning and what they've dug themselves into. Verify had its roots in Brexit, actually, when the then news director, James Harding, wanted to counter the prevailing feeling that the BBC was, the Brexiteers are winning because they're giving us misinformation. And there was a famous quote about the figure on the side of the bus. It got into the body politic that there was a kind of a conspiracy, if you like, against those who saw the light and knew that it was good to be in the EU. And that has gradually consolidated. And what it's arrived at now is they announced about a year ago a unit of about 60 journalists whose sole job is to root out misinformation. Now, the immediate question is, who is the arbiter here? I've already mentioned climate change. The BBC are firmly in the climate alarmist. You look at any aspect of their climate coverage. For nearly 20 years now, anybody who says they don't agree with there's a climate emergency has not even been allowed on the airwaves. And so you've got this box that says, we know what's going on in that domain. So what Verifying is doing is doubling down on this. And they have their disinformation correspondent, Mariana Spring, who's obviously caught the public eye. And she has been courting the public eye in a pretty high level. She just published a book. And what she set herself out is a kind of, I think, a kind of witch finder general. And I'm going right back to the Matthew Hopkins principle in East Anglia in the 1640s. She has decided that certain people are conspiracy theorists and that they need to be called out. And she's chosen a newspaper called The Light, which is a broad sweep of opinions, some of which does have some strange ideas in there. But that's what debate is about and what freedom of expression is about. What the BBC is doing, is trying to do under this name of disinformation and Verify, is just close down freedom of expression. And that is truly sinister.
So the problem is not so much that the BBC are doing that, but it's more that they're deciding what's misinformation and what isn't,
yes,
based on their own...
Yeah, their confirmation bundle. And they've joined with organisations who are similarly left-leaning throughout the world to do this.
Right.
Plus the big companies like Google and Microsoft. So they're in alliance with all the people who are trying to control the agenda of what is said. It is deeply, deeply worrying that this is happening. And it's making the BBC, I think, into a propagandist.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is the Trusted News Initiative. What role does that play?
Well, that's part of the same spectrum, right. The Trusted News. The Trusted News Initiative is at the international level. It's the BBC's editorial standards department combining with similar departments of organisations in India, America, etc., like the New York Times. So it's getting together and saying, we know what the truth is. Mm. And that, again, I think is a big worry for democratic societies. There's a huge impulse and momentum towards trying to shut alternative views down.
It seemed almost ironic that the BBC launched this Trusted News Initiative and not that long later they were ranked one of the least trusted public service news broadcasters in the world.
Exactly, yes.
So, outside the BBC headquarters, there's a statue of George Orwell. What do you think he would make of our current BBC?
I think he'd be turning in his grave. I think he wrote 1984 as a warning. He had a great awareness of what totalitarianism could look like. And the irony is that it's beginning to happen, I think.
David Cayley, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.